Second case this morning is 2020-1062, Tammy Smathers individually on behalf of the estate of Harmony Brooklyn Rain Carsey versus Rick Glass, Executive Director of Perry County Children's Services et al. For the appellant, Mr. Traska.
Thank you, Madam Chief Justice. Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Peter Traska. It is my privilege to represent Tammy Smathers and the estate of Harmony Carsey. I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, if I may. This is from the note that appellee Katie Hersey made on November 12th during the call that PCCS finally screened in with respect to Harmony. This is Katie Hersey writing down what she was being told by Tammy Smathers. The two-year-old is kept in a bedroom upstairs because Crystal cannot handle her. It is unknown how the child is kept in the room. Those words were documented 8 weeks and one day before Harmony would be found dead, dehydrated, restrained to her cage, her modified crib, in the stifling hot room about which Tammy Smathers had warned the appellees at the beginning of their involvement and throughout their involvement.
Counsel, let me just ask a procedural question. If we agree hypothetically with your third proposition about de novo, not competent, credible evidence, do we even need to reach the other three propositions of law?
No, Your Honor. That issue would be dispositive of this case.
Thank you.
And would we just remand it to the trial court for the trial court to decide whether summary judgment is appropriate under the proper standard?
Your Honors, as I was instructed in appellate advocacy, you never disagree with a question that disposes the case your way. The short answer to your question is that, and to Justice Fisher's question, is that this case would absolutely have to be remanded. And I think that the error on the Fifth District's reasoning is patent. Civil Rule 52 was cited. Civil Rule 52 governs bench trials. Obviously, when one is reviewing a fact-finding process like a trial to the court, that's a situation where the factual findings get deference. This is on a Rule 56 motion for summary judgment. It's bewildering that the Court of Appeals did this, and that issue would be dispositive. What I would caution is that while we've had this statutory standards in place since, I think it's 1984, the Political Subdivision Act, we know that the exceptions to immunity are for conduct that is reckless, that is wanton, that is with malicious purpose or in bad faith. The case law has had to illustrate each of those standards and in lots of different contexts. These are the standards that apply to the police. These are the standards that apply to somebody who works for the city water department. They're not really one-size-fits-all language. And this court hasn't had too many of these cases with respect to social workers. So O'Toole versus Denahan is obviously
the one. So does it get remanded to the appellate court for them to do the analysis with the right standard, or does it go back to the trial court?
Justice Kennedy, I've never considered that question until just right now. I would say my gut says that this should go back to the trial court.
Why?
Because the trial court has to make too many calls ab initio. In other words, we know that neither the trial court nor the Court of Appeals said anything about the admissibility or the impact of the two expert witnesses that the plaintiffs put together. That feels to me like a call that should go back to the trial court with instruction, because the only thing the Court of Appeals could say is the experts here matter.
Mr. Traska, can't we
if we're on de novo review for summary judgment, it means there's no material question of fact. So why couldn't this court simply perform the de novo review since it's a legal question and then send it back to the trial court?
That's, Your Honor, I believe that this court could also do that, and I think that that would be illustrative of how these standards apply to social workers. O'Toole versus Denehan is what everybody is pointing at as the go-by. This court determined that summary judgment was appropriate in that case because there was a safety plan in place for the child, because they had done a background check, because there had been a month or so without communication regarding the abuse that led to the abuse in that case. All of those factors are different here, but the reason that it would better serve the development of the law in this area for this court to make these determinations. One, we asked the lower court to do it and they declined. Two, when you're determining how does reckless apply, how does bad faith apply, when you're determining these things, you have to have some cases to make comparisons, and there aren't very many of those.
So is it a legal question or a mixed question of law and fact?
There are mixed questions of law and fact on this record. The only issue that either of the lower courts engaged with is the narrative that the social workers believed that Harmony was with her parents continuously from Thanksgiving through Christmas. We briefed this thoroughly in the trial court, in the Court of Appeals, and again in this court. There is ample evidence to disbelieve that narrative, foremost of which, Harmony was seen by Apple Pease on December 11th of 2015, which is almost exactly the midpoint between those two holidays. Their PCCS's documentation never says that they believed that Harmony was staying continuously with her grandmother and father. If you look at the rest of Tammy's testimony, Tammy says what all of the other family members said, which is that the kids were being shuttled back and forth during that time. But all the family members came out and said, if you would have ever told Crystal that we're keeping the kids, she would have actually become violent. She, I think it was Tyler Carsey's sister, said, sure, if we'd have said that we're keeping the kids, she'd have met us at the door with a gun in our face. So if you look at all of the testimony together, which is what Smith versus Byrd says the court is required to do, there is definitely an issue of fact on this record about where this kid was staying and about whether Appley Pease's affidavit that he believed that Harmony was staying just with Tyler and Tammy Smathers. I think this would be a very easy issue to try.
But Mr. Traska, you opened your argument reading the note from the social worker, what happened after that note? And could the procedural issues with the summary judgment notwithstanding, if we got to the substance after that letter that you read or after that notation, what happened that would rise to the level of willful or wanton misconduct as opposed to negligence?
And I think that is, in all immunity cases, that is the question to ask. I would reframe Your Honor's question just slightly to say you have to start this inquiry under social work practices, under the administrative code, and as Dr. Clark made very, very plain in his affidavit. The question becomes even what they knew before that call came in November of 15. Crystal Carsey had one child taken away permanently, lost custody to Tammy Smathers. She had been subject to several substantiated reports of child abuse in the past. There was a call screened out by Tammy Smathers.
Tammy Smathers being the grandmother,
grandmother,
for the audience.
Yeah. The grandmother also called in October. The notes say that it looks like the kids haven't eaten for a while, they smell bad, it looks like they rolled in pot ashes or something like that. Tammy was trying to get their attention. All of these things, and she had an open warrant for child endangerment going back to June of 2015. Now, both she and Tyler had left the kids in the car, but Tyler went to court. If Crystal were to get stopped by the police for anything, she was at risk of being picked up because she had an open warrant. That's not a safe situation for the kids. Any background check, any diligence on the part of the appellees would have identified that issue and would have said, we need to step in more. So what they knew before is not simply a matter of beating up on Crystal Carsey. It is the it's the foundation of the decision-making process that is prescribed by Ohio law and that is prescribed by social work practice generally. So that's all before. The moment they go into the house and they got the in-person visit that's required when a case is screened in, they got that done within 4 days, I think it was November 15th. The moment they go into the house, it is blindingly apparent that Crystal is an extreme hoarder and that this house is not safe probably for anybody, let alone for kids of tender years. And it's hard to explain how that fact didn't just hit. If the only issue were how messy the house was so messy that these kids should have been out of there that day. It is incomprehensible that they weren't. The social workers, this is Ben Taylor and Nick Pease, they saw the upstairs of the room. They saw the way that the crib was modified so that two of the sides of the crib were bolted to the wall. There's an exposed electrical outlet right there, not even one of the little child safe plugs in it, exposed electrical outlet. These are all the things that they knew immediately upon taking in the case.
And those were in their notes?
The notes, no, Your Honor. What's in the notes is that the home was somewhat cluttered. The notes sort of minimized what was going on.
Okay. What did they say about the upstairs?
They said in the November 15th note, I don't think they said anything about the upstairs. It's in the deposition testimony that we find out that they were there and that they were in position to observe these things. Mm-hmm. But the notes minimize what's going on, which I think is really a big part of the problem. This is all before the hospitalization. The day before, Harmony Carsey collapses while she is with her grandmother. The day before, Nick Pease and Ben Taylor were there. They saw this kid. She's 24 hours away from being documented as being so small that she's off the bottom of the chart for growth. She's in the 0.00 percentile for growth. This kid was documented by LifeLate as weighing 15 pounds, 2 years old, 15 pounds. They could see the cradle cap. They could see the bruises all over her body, not documented. Now, we've pointed to the completion, the very belated completion of the safety assessment as being damning evidence in this case. I don't think it's a close call at the time this kid is life-lighted. Katie Hersey tried to say initially that she didn't get any indication. She was cross-examined on Deputy Kulchar's note that there are mandatory reporting statutes. If a kid shows up at a hospital, law enforcement's going to be there. Law enforcement is going to be calling social workers. Thank goodness Deputy Kulchar documented what he told Katie Hersey. Look at the difference between what he says is happening in that first emergency room and what Katie Hersey wrote down. I don't know why the appellees tamped down at every opportunity what was going on with this kid. But they had it isn't that there is some reason for this to go to a jury. There was every reason for this to go to a jury. Your Honors, I'm concerned I might be out of time. I'll reserve what I have for rebuttal.
Thank you. Mr. Teeter.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. I'm Matt Teeter, and I'm honored to be here on behalf of the four appellees, Rick Glass and caseworkers Katie Hersey, Ben Taylor, and Nick Pease. This case was decided by both the lower courts on undisputed, unequivocal facts, not on any unique issue of law. Appellant's theory at this stage of the case is that these individual caseworkers should have removed Harmony from Crystal's home at a time when Harmony was no longer residing there.
You can't really argue that the Court of Appeals applied the right standard of review, though, for summary judgment, can you?
The Court of Appeals did apply the right standard, Your Honor.
The Court of Appeals said it was it would not disturb the trial court's factual findings, quote, as long as it was supported by competent, credible evidence. That's wrong as a matter of law, right?
At paragraph 48 of the Court of Appeals decision,
Okay, but let me ask you about the statement that I asked you about. That's wrong as a matter of law, right?
The Court of Appeals independently reviewed the entirety of the record.
Again, you agree that statement is wrong.
I believe the Court of Appeals reviewed the entirety of the record.
Okay, so you're not going to say the statement is wrong, but we all know it's wrong. The Court of Appeals went through each one and looked at whether they were supported by competent, credible evidence, right?
Under a de novo review, Your Honor.
Well, those things are incompatible, right? De novo review is the opposite of competent, credible evidence.
If I may quote the Court of Appeals decision on paragraph 53, it expressly stated that it found the record supports the trial court's finding that Harmony Carsey was in the physical custody of Tyler Carsey and appellant Tammy Smathers for the time period between the child's discharge from the hospital and her return to Crystal's house on or about Christmas Day.
But again, the record supports is different than the summary judgment standard, which is there has to be de novo review, no genuine dispute of material fact.
And I believe, Your Honor, if this court found that the Court of Appeals did not apply the correct standard, the appropriate remedy would be to remand this to the Court of Appeals and instruct it to review the entirety of the record under the de novo review. However, I believe that the court specifically stated that it did conduct a de novo review, it independently reviewed the entirety of the record, and it concurred, based on the competent, credible evidence, that summary judgment was warranted, that these individual appellees did not act recklessly, and that they were entitled to immunity.
Mr. Teeter, are you trying to say basically that the Court of Appeals found that the trial court did not abuse its discretion in looking at what facts were deemed to be settled in the record and no issue?
Your Honor, I believe both courts independently reviewed the record and found that the material, undisputed facts, based upon the deposition testimony of both appellant Tammy Smathers and Tyler Carsey, warranted summary judgment.
Okay, so let me follow that up. Sorry if you weren't quite finished. So we really do need to get to wanton, reckless, intentional, because do you agree with your colleague that it is a mixed question of law and fact, or simply a question of law when we get to the question of immunity, which is why you're here for your clients?
The question of whether or not an individual actor is reckless is a question of law. It is a legal conclusion that courts have the authority to make based on the record before it. As opposing counsel alluded to, one of the propositions of law that appellants have set forth is that the trial court and the appellate court didn't consider the expert affidavits. What the appellate court did concerning the expert affidavit was identify Lindsay v. Summit County, which stands for the proposition that an expert's opinion, an expert's affidavit, is not a legal conclusion. The legal conclusion as to recklessness is within the province of the court. And both the trial court and appellate court did not consider the legal conclusions while still considering the factual assertions of those affidavits. However, that expert affidavit falls short for three reasons. It does not negate the undisputed facts here upon which both the trial court and the appellate court made its ultimate determination. It does not specify what each appellee actually knew at the time that each appellee took the actions that they took. And it does not make a legal conclusion, it makes the legal conclusion that is reserved for the court to make as far as whether or not an individual was reckless.
So is it possible that this competent, credible evidence, which we don't normally hear in any kind of a review, de novo review of summary judgment, was simply to solidify what the facts were to draw the legal conclusions then on immunity, wanton, reckless, intentional, et cetera?
I think that would be an accurate interpretation. I believe the appellate court conducted its independent review, expressly stated that it was conducting that review de novo, and then based on the evidence before it, without subject to the legal conclusions made by appellant's paid experts, it made its own inference and its own decision on recklessness.
So are you saying an expert can't render an opinion based on their examination of a file, whether or not they believe something was wanton, willful, or reckless?
I believe that an expert can render an opinion based on facts, but it cannot make a legal conclusion. That was the holding of Lindsay v. Summit County, and it was reaffirmed by the appellate court in this decision.
Counsel, let me understand that. You're saying the expert could not have looked at the facts and then said it fell short of the administrative code directives.
I believe that the appellate can look at the facts and
the expert. We're saying the expert looks at the facts,
not
the appellate.
My apologies, Your Honor. I believe the expert can look at the facts and give opinions as to what it believes based on the administrative code. However, what Lindsay v. Summit County precludes is an expert making a decision as to recklessness. That is a legal conclusion reserved for the court. What the expert in this opinion did, or in his affidavit did, was set forth a long list of facts that the record does not support any of these appellees actually knew. That when these appellees took their action.
All right, so that alone sets up the scenario that there's disputed facts in this case, that there's evidence that is contrary. There's, you know, what did they know? When did they know it? All that disputed, correct?
My opening line was that this case was decided based on undisputed facts.
I know that's what you said, but I'm not hearing that. And from the record, you know, I'm not seeing that.
Here are the undisputed facts upon which both the lower courts decided this case. When Harmony Carsey was discharged from the hospital on November 24th, she was released to her father and to appellant Tammy Smathers. From that point on, based on the testimony of appellant and Tyler, they both said they had her. She was in their custody. She was residing with.
But that wasn't the only evidence in the record, right? There was evidence to the contrary of that. So you have to credit the testimony of Ann Tyler to believe that.
Mm-hmm. Your Honor, I'm afraid I don't understand the question.
There was testimony going both ways on that issue, right? There was conflicting testimony whether the caseworkers knew that Harmony was in her mother's care during the time leading up to her death, correct?
The testimony from both appellant and Tyler unequivocally states that they had her from the time she was discharged to the hospital to Christmas. There was an arrangement, and both appellant and Tyler testified to it, that they would allow the children to visit Crystal Carsey's home, but then retrieve her.
The caseworkers actually found Harmony in her mother's care during that period, right?
That's correct.
So there is conflicting testimony on where she was, right?
And even the testimony that we had her does that necessarily mean physical control at all times or under their legal control?
When in Nick Pease's affidavit and in the activity logs, Nick Pease did see Harmony at Crystal Kersey's home on December 11th. He then returned to that home on December 18th. At that point, he was returning there to get the medical authorization to obtain Harmony Carsey's medical records from her hospital stay. On that particular time, Harmony was not there. She had been returned to the home of appellant and was residing with Crystal and Tyler. Their testimony is unequivocal that they had her during that month. Their testimony is also unequivocal that on Christmas Day, they returned her. Finally, their testimony is unequivocal that from the meeting where they brought Harmony to the Children's Services offices to show her to Nick Pease and tell Nick Pease and Ben Taylor that they were taking her to the courthouse that day to formalize custody, they never contacted Children's Services again. They never contacted Children's Services to let them know about the arrangement. Nick Pease found that out by going to Crystal Carsey's home on the 11th and then again on the 18th, confirming Harmony was going back and forth between the homes. But when they returned her on Christmas Day, they did not inform Nick Pease, Ben Taylor, Katie Hersey, or Rick Glass that they had done so, and they never informed any of those four individuals that Crystal Carsey did not return her to appellant and Tyler.
Was it incumbent upon them to inform the social worker that they were going back and forth? Or they did do that, but you're saying on the 25th they did not.
They did not inform anyone on the 25th that they returned her and that they did not subsequently regain
custody. But the office
custody.
Knew they were going back and forth, that the trial was going back and forth between homes.
That was the understanding that Nick Pease had when he went multiple times to Crystal Carsey's home. I think it's indicative that Nick Pease returned to that home several times in order to make contact, in order to ensure that things were moving, that were progressing smoothly. That's indicative of not being reckless. He followed up. He wanted to make sure that this was continuing to progress the way it had. On the meeting
at December. But at the same time, ensuring the safety of the child?
Excuse me, Your Honor?
But at the same time, ensuring the safety of the child who was being removed from the home?
That's correct. On December 4th, when he saw Harmony physically with appellant and with Tyler, they reported that she was gaining weight back, that her hair was growing back, that she was, quote, doing awesome. Then when he saw her visiting her mother's house on December 11th, he saw her again and inspected her. He found that the diaper rash that had been reported when she was in the hospital was clearing up. She appeared to be fine. She appeared to not be in any risk of imminent harm. And that is the standard for Children's Services to take a kid away. They have to be in an imminent risk of harm. And at that singular visit on December 11th, it appeared that she was doing okay.
Mr. So Teeter, it was an open case, right? It never closed.
That's correct, Your Honor.
All right, so one would think there'd be numerous visits, not just her hair's growing back. She doesn't have a diaper rash, okay? But she still sleeps in a cage with an open outlet.
Well, Your Honor, I would suggest that the the term cage is a misnomer here. That crib was fastened to the wall ostensibly or to keep it from tipping over. Harmony was reported to be a rocker. That's in her medical charts. She would rock back and forth, and it's believed that that's what caused some of her hair loss. If you fasten a cage to a wall to prevent it from tipping over, I would suggest that that's trying to make a situation more safe for Harmony, not less safe. A cage itself, the definition of a cage, is an enclosure whereby it would restrict Harmony's movement. This was not a cage. This was a crib with one side removed and put over a window so that she could not access the window, again, making a situation safer for Harmony. I can see my time's almost up.
Your client's position is that they were trying to help the family, not trying to break them up. Does that play into, this goes beyond negligence. Does that play into assessing whether they met the standard of wanton, reckless, intentional to get past immunity?
I believe it does, Your Honor. The caseworkers in this case and across the state of Ohio don't enter into these types of situations. They don't knock on doors where they're not wanted with families who may not want their involvement.
But going back to Justice Stewart's question, isn't Children's Services' main focus on the child?
Children's Services' main focus is on the child. But the name Children's Services Agencies has the operative word services. It's not a child removal agency. Their first gut reaction is not to remove a child. It's to help a family get through difficult times. It's to help assess problems and assess issues and resolve those issues. And that's what Nick tried to do here. At his first visit, he acknowledged that Crystal might have a hoarding problem. He got her in line with integrated services and tried to get her counseling. He identified issues with the refrigerator and tried to help her find a new fridge through St. Vincent de Paul. He got her a new pack and play. He identified that this was a family that had issues. This was a family in crisis. But the children did appear fine. And that's corroborated by the police chief going with Nick at that first visit. He also didn't say these children need to be taken away immediately. He said, this is a mom who might be overwhelmed that needs some help. And that's what they endeavored to do throughout the pendency of this case. I can see my time is up. I thank you, and we urge you to affirm the lower court's decision. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Counsel? You have about 2 minutes left.
Thank you, Your Honor. Two quick points. It isn't true that the testimony that Tammy gave was undisputed. Tammy's testimony was disputed even within the confines of her own deposition. She also testified that the kids were going back and forth during that time. But if you look at all of the testimony together, it's clear that there was an issue of fact as to whether it was reasonable for PCCS to believe that the kids were staying with Tammy and Tyler during that time frame. The second question.
Counsel, what's the definition of back and forth?
On this record?
Yes.
The testimony was, I spelled this out in the reply brief pretty well, but the testimony was to the effect that it was a few days on and a few days off. I don't know that anybody made that crystal clear, what that schedule was. But it seemed that Tammy and Tyler were trying to keep Harmony and Harmony's sister also. And they were shuttling back and forth. To that point, this is not a new issue to Children's Services. Appley Glass testified that when a kid is splitting time between two homes, it's the agency's responsibility to have eyes on both. And every time that Mr. Pease followed up, he followed up at Tammy's, at Crystal's residence, not at Tammy's. So there's ample indication here. The other thing I wanted to get to is that the question of what is an expert's role, I would ordinarily agree that as a general proposition, an expert cannot give you a legal conclusion. But when you look at the Section 500 definition of recklessness, I think it goes about 55 words what that means. Eventually, that has to be translated to a jury instruction in immunity cases. So we do ask lay persons to make judgment calls about whether a fact pattern fits a legal standard, like what it means to be reckless, what does bad faith mean. So to my mind, I think that the right answer here is that provided the expert opinion is well-founded, and 28 pages of factual findings with headings like what Appellees knew at this time, those are the facts of this case.
So what you're asking us to do is send this back so you're going to have a jury trial?
Yes, Your Honor. We're asking you to reverse and remand to the Perry County Court of Common Pleas.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. We'll take the matter under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decision.